We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. Joining me now, Chris Biederman. Honorary Memphisite for the show. And boy, we've got a hell of an NFC championship game to talk about. But before we do that, I want to shout out our friends over at Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website. It is the official clothing brand of Candlestick Chronicles because, of course, it is high quality. It is super comfy. It has zippered pockets. And most importantly, it looks dope. I saw Craig today. I saw the homie Craig. Him and a bunch of his buddies were out at the Niner game, so I went and caught up with them before the game. And nice. It just reaffirmed why I enjoy this company so much, because all the people around it are really, really great. So shout out to Craig, who had his rally cap on for the second half, and it worked to the 49ers' advantage.
Can confirm, Craig, awesome dude, good hang, and yeah, man, good people. Good people to partner with, and obviously a great brand, and we love Lamb Shop, so check them out, support them, and we appreciate them supporting us.
Candlestick20 is the promo code to get 20% off your order. Hoodie, shorts, sweatpants, whatever you want. My dad says they're the best sweatpants that he owns. He loves them so much. Wears them all the time. You'll do the same. SGLambShops.com. We're also sponsored by Cooperage Brewing. We love Cooperage. They are the makers of Candlestick Chronicles Hazy IPA. I hope there were some being drank in the parking lot before, during, and after the game tonight. I don't know if there were. I didn't see any, but I also wasn't looking super close.
Sources confirmed that, yes, they were, in fact, being enjoyed.
Oh, good.
Being enjoyed at Levi's Stadium today.
Well, good. You can get yours today at CooperageBrewing.com. You go to the website, you can order a case, they'll send it right to your front door if you're 21 and up and in the state of California, or any of their other delicious beers. I think they have, help me out, Keg Slayer. Yeah, I believe they have Keg Slayer now available.
I think they do too. I don't have their website up right now, but we have the technology. This is really good podcast content. All right. Of course, I'm on hotel Wi-Fi, so it's not going to go super quickly for me.
Go right now to CooperageBrewing.com, and if they have Keg Slayer, I cannot recommend enough getting a case of it. It is my second favorite beer that they make behind Candlestick Chronicles, but of course, every beer that they make is great, and you know that because so many breweries and people who work at breweries around the Santa Rosa area love to hang out at Cooperage, and you will too. Get your beer at CooperageBrewing.com or go hang out at the brewery in Santa Rosa. It's a great spot. All right.
Your favorite brewery's favorite brewery.
Facts.
Shout out to Cooperage.
Facts. All right. Let's dive into this ridiculous football game.
Blue Wire.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
Know what just happened. I was there, not to brag, and I saw the game happen, but I'm like, here, I'll just be straight up. At halftime, I was talking to our guy Nick Wagner from ESPN, not to brag, and just chopping it up. And it was like, well, people are going to be canceling plans for Vegas. Hey, they're going to have a first round pick in the draft this year. Because I didn't think, usually, like against the Packers, all right, the Niners are down 7, but it's like, man, you know what? They do a couple things different and they're winning this game. It's fine. But Detroit was dominating that game so thoroughly. And in ways that I didn't think the Niners, I didn't think there was an adjustment. I thought Detroit was just better. Their offensive line was getting a ton of push. Ben Johnson had Steve Wilkes in the 49ers defense on their heels the entire first half. And it just didn't look like there was going to be a pathway where, even if the 49ers offense started rolling and got things figured out, where their defense is going to get enough stops. Because like teams don't come back from 17. Being down 17 is it you just don't. I think 5 and 99, I think, is what I saw in the Super Bowl era that teams are when trailing by 17 in a playoff game, or 17 at halftime of a playoff game.
Yeah, and I think this tied for the largest comeback in championship game history.
Yeah, right. Which the Niners had right in 2012 against the Falcons.
I believe so.
So. I didn't see a pathway where they were A, going to play well enough to overcome a deficit, and B, have the Lions play poorly enough to have the Niners overcome that deficit. And then they did.
This is kind of why we like sports, right? Like not only do you know the teams you follow, like you root for the teams that you follow, right? And obviously they bring a great deal of joy when they win. But there's a certain level of unpredictability that happens in sports. And when I say that, I mean, like, we can talk till we're blue in the face about everything we know about the 49ers, right? Mm-hmm. And going into the game, it was, man, they're really good when they play from ahead. And they haven't won these games where they fall down early and they turn the ball over and they get pushed around. That just hasn't happened, right? Those games have typically turned into losses. But then you have games like tonight where everything you've come to understand about a team based on the evidence that you have can sometimes not always be a predictor of what's going to happen in the future. And I think that's why we love the NFL. And I think why the NFL has such a stranglehold on the sports market in this country is because you have scarcity in the sense that it's a one and done situation.
Right.
It's not a 7-game series, right? Mm-hmm. It can be we can know that the Niners are a much better team than the Detroit Lions and have all this evidence to back it up. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go in and just win the game just because you've been the better team all season, right? You actually have to go out and do it. And the Lions were taking it to the 49ers to start that game, like flat out.
They got their asses whooped.
They were kicking the 49ers' asses. And hearing the players talk in the press conference afterwards, it didn't sound like there was like much rah-rah stuff going on in the locker room. It sounded like the players were just pissed off. And they channeled that and obviously channeled it into some positivity and ended up winning the game. And there's so much that happened in the second half that we can talk about, including the Lions just kind of giving the game away. There were so many, Josh Reynolds drop on fourth down, a killer. Josh Reynolds drop on third down, a killer. Jahmyr Gibbs fumble, an absolute killer. The 50-yard completion of Brandon Ayuk that bounces off the DB's face mask and right to him, setting up a touchdown, an absolute killer. But look, man, football's one of those games where you can get breaks. And, you know, If you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you've heard me say that I believe in the cliche, the adage that sometimes more games are lost than won. That's how you lose a game when you're the Lions and you fumble it away. And that's one of the reasons why I thought coming in that the 49ers were going to win, because it's just they have more adults in the room. They're a more veteran team. They're more experienced. And it felt like the Lions were the deer in the headlights in the second half of that game, because it's really tough to go on the road. And look, in the NFL, the championship round is by far the best atmosphere you will find in the league. It's not even close.
Yes. Yeah, right. Levi Stadium was awesome tonight.
And it was coming through the TV. I'm in Memphis, and I was like, damn, like Levi's like turned up right now when the 49ers were going on that run in the third quarter. But it was just one of those games where, like, we had assumed that the 49ers were just, I don't want to say front runners, but just a team that had been comfortable in winning a game a certain way. And then it was a little bit uncomfortable last week in the rain against the Packers when they had to come from behind from 7 points, something they haven't done, you know, that we've seen them do recently. Mm-hmm. And then do it from down 17 points where they haven't, what you had the stat earlier, hadn't the 49ers not won a game since Kyle Shanahan became coach by when they trailed by 14 points?
I didn't look that up, but I'm almost certain it's correct. I can't remember a game where they were down by that many and won.
Right. So it just speaks to like what's fun about sports, and particularly the NFL and the playoffs, is just the overall unpredictability of it. And like it happened in Baltimore too. It was like, mm-hmm. we have all this evidence saying Baltimore is a historically good team, and we can look at DVOA numbers, and we can look at the way they kicked the shit out of some of the teams they played, including the Niners and Lions, and some other good teams along the way. And then the Chiefs can still go and beat them. I think the NFL is the most level playing field in American professional sports, particularly in the playoffs, that anybody can beat anybody. Mm-hmm. But for the Niners now, like, I'm of the belief that they're in a much better place, having experienced the last 2 weeks the way that they have and having to fight back in these games, than 2019 when they just kind of boat raced the Vikings and the Packers before going to the Super Bowl, right? Like, there is value in being battle tested. And when we talked about the Eagles game back in November, one of the points of that game was like, yeah, the Eagles are kind of like pulling all these wins out of their asses, and maybe they're not as good as their record says they are. But like, they have been in these situations. They're battle tested. That's like an advantage that it felt like the Eagles had. Turns out didn't really matter because they fell apart. But now going into the Super Bowl, you go, okay, the 49ers are a team that has proven that they can be dominant. They can dominate an NFL team, a good NFL team on any given day. Mm-hmm. And now you feel better about them, in my opinion, because they've proven that they can win these games where maybe they don't have their best for a full half. They can come back and do it.
So
all that being said, they still got some breaks.
Yeah,
they caught a lot of breaks.
Okay, no, I totally agree with you. They caught breaks, but I think the other way to say that is they made plays in big spots and the Lions didn't.
Absolutely.
The Brandon Ayuk, so first of all, two things on the Brandon Ayuk catch. One, maybe the sickest play I've ever seen live. Two, three things on the Brandon Ayuk catch, it turns out. Two, that was not almost an, that was, I saw after the game people calling it a near interception or should have been an interception. If that had been intercepted, that would have been a sick ass interception. That would have been a ridiculous catch. It was a incompletion that turned into a 51-yard completion. So I just want to get that out there. The guy should not have caught it. That would have been crazy.
And Ayuk made an amazing play to adjust on the fly and dive and catch it. Yeah.
That's it. That was a 49ers player in the moment of the game. Instead of going, oh, I'm not going to catch it, and slumping his shoulders and quitting on the play, making a that wasn't it bounced off the guy and into Ayuk's hands and it was like, oh wow, lucky that it bounced off the guy's face mask, and the 49ers player went and made a play. Yeah. Jahmyr Gibbs runs into the line, Tayshawn Gibson, your guy, flies in with force, knocks the ball out, Eric Armstead there falls on it. That's the 49ers making a play. Brock Purdy scrambling as many times as he did tonight, that's a guy making a play. The one where he almost got sacked and found Juszczyk for 10 yards after they had tied it at 24, like, that's unbelievable.
That was sick. Just by both of them.
Yeah, right. And so, like you said, there are so many instances, and I'm sure we'll get into them, of plays that could have gone the Lions' way that would have changed the game, and that's 100%. The 49ers ultimately, like, top to bottom, start to finish, didn't play well enough tonight. But they made enough plays down the stretch to win. And that was one of the things I was talking to Jeff Risden, who's covers the Lions for Lions Wire. When we were talking before the game, he talked about kind of the experience factor, and I think you saw it there.
Yeah,
I think you saw the Niners being like, yeah, hey, been in this spot before, just got to kind of methodically move forward in this game, and the Lions didn't. And if you're gonna say like, oh well, Brock Purdy actually was bad because that play was lucky or whatever, like, yeah, that's what happens to come back from 17 down in a NFC Championship game. That's not easy to do. There's going to be a couple of breaks. And they took advantage. And they turned a 17-point deficit into a tie game in 8 minutes. That's ridiculous. And it takes some breaks.
I think it's a great point. Like, not only the 49ers got breaks, but they also just made more plays. Like, unquestionably, they made more plays. And Brock Purdy made a lot of plays, including scrambles with his legs. He ran for 49 yards in the second half.
Yeah.
And you know, like those were not the one before where he just dusts Alex Anzalone, who was spying him on the play.
Yeah.
Dusts him for a big game right before Christian McCaffrey has a big run where it looked like he jammed his neck after somersaulting forward just before the Elijah Mitchell touchdown. That was a huge play. And all of Brock Purdy's runs, you know, ended up leading to points. And you know, for the Niners they outscored Detroit, 27-7 in the second half. It was just, you know, that's one of those, like, that's in a historic game. That's probably, like, that's, you know, I think that's probably the most memorable game of the Kyle Shanahan era because of everything that happened, because of, For right now, if the 49ers win the Super Bowl, then winning a Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs would obviously be the most memorable game. But like, in terms of, you know, the chips being down, whatever the term is, and you know, the 49ers needing to have that comeback that they've never had, and the context of it, and the fact that, you know, we've seen Brock Purdy play really well and win a bunch of games, but never doing it in that specific way. Coming off last week when it didn't exactly inspire a ton of confidence in Purdy playing in the rain. And now, like, oh, you're down 17 points. We're just going to steamroll the Lions in the second half. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, Purdy was 13 of 16. And the touchdown pass to Brandon Ayuk was not a simple play either. He moved in the pocket.
Really nice play.
He had a really small window. It was third down, right? Like, that was... That was a great play by Purdy too. That might get lost in the shuffle just in terms of how difficult of a throw and play that was to make. So look, I don't want to, this isn't going to be brought the Brock Purdy haters down bad. Like, Brock Purdy made a bunch of plays and helped his team get to the Super Bowl, right? Like, however you want to rank him against whoever else, like, that doesn't matter. You judge quarterbacks by winning games, and Brock Purdy made plays to win games. And it was very clear tonight that he was responsible. His playmaking was largely responsible for the offense's production and the 49ers winning that game. And over a, you know, there might be times when the running game doesn't work and maybe Christian McCaffrey's hurt and maybe Brock Purdy has to throw it 25 times and a half and it looks different than it did tonight. Or there will be times like tonight, and Tom Brady had plenty of these too, where he won a playoff game with a 82 passer rating and came up, you know, had two good drives in the fourth quarter and is hailed as this all-time god because of everything he did. But it wasn't always like superhuman performances for 60 minutes. There were struggles in there too with every great quarterback in the playoffs, and the playoffs are hard, and like, winning in the playoffs is really, really difficult. So for Brock Purdy, and you had a great tweet on Twitter, formerly Twitter. I guess it's a post now.
It's a post.
Where, like, you know, like, screw the discussion. Like, Brock Purdy's in his second, not only did he take a team to a Super Bowl in his second full season as a starting quarterback, his second season in the league. He's the first Mr. Irrelevant to ever throw a pass in the NFL. He just turned 24, right? Like, if you just let all of that speak for itself and just divorce yourself from the idea of like, well, would he do this if he played for the Jaguars with a shitty supporting cast? It's like, who cares? It doesn't matter. It's completely immaterial to anything that's happening. He's helping the 49ers win games. And if Brock Purdy wins a championship for this franchise, then he goes down as somebody, he goes down in history as an all-time important figure for the Bay Area, for the Niners organization. Yeah. And that's really the most important thing, and that's all that really matters. You can rank him, you can do an imaginary draft with all the other quarterbacks. It does not matter at all. All that matters is the 49ers are in the Super Bowl again, and Brock Purdy played a huge role in helping him get there.
I want to make sure that this is he wasn't superb. He made enough plays to win.
Yeah.
That said, he's the only quarterback I ever see whose near interceptions get harped on ever. Like, Lamar Jackson had several near interceptions against the Chiefs in their loss, by the way. And you don't see, oh, hey, Lamar Jackson, he wasn't terrible, but he did have three near interceptions. So, ergo, like, it's so dumb. It's such a strange aspect of this. Like, Purdy and the 49ers haven't played their best in two consecutive weeks, and they found ways to win both games. After all year, you and I and every person who follows or watches or pontificates or writes about this team going, okay, that's great, they can blow teams out, but what do they do in a tight game? What do they do when it's tight in the playoffs? What do they do when they're down three with a minute and a half left?
It's like, when Jake Moody's missing kicks.
Boy, it's tough because, like, he came back and drilled two important ones.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I am never confident when Jake Moody trots onto the field, bro. Not even a little. The 33-yarder, you know what? The 33-yarder, I was like, he's making this. He wasn't missing from 33. The 43-yarder, I was a little surprised it went in. Not gonna lie.
No, but I mean, here's the thing. If a quarterback was perfect and never threw any incompletions and only threw complete darts that were all 30 yards down the field, then we would say, oh, that's the best quarterback we've ever seen. He completes all of his passes. It's the biggest moments. Like, it's just completely unrealistic for any quarterback. Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs only scored 17 points today.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, like, we don't have to do the thing where, like, the only acceptable outcome is perfect play. And I think that's something that we do with quarterbacks. It's like, oh, that was a sketchy interception, or oh, that, like, oh, his completion rate isn't high enough, or whatever. It's like, man, you want a dude who's going to complete 85% of his throws in a playoff game and have every completion go for 30 yards? It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even Patrick Mahomes, that doesn't happen. Tom Brady, that never happens. Like, it's not how this works.
It's an insane standard.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kyle Madsen with Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and I'm here to talk to you about my new favorite thing about football season, and that's Prize Picks. It's daily fantasy sports, the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America. It's easy, exciting, and that's my two favorite things to have in daily fantasy football. There's quick withdrawals, it's easy gameplay, there's so many selections of players and stat types that make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. And I know you're probably worried about, like, daily fantasy sports. Oh, there's pros and there's sharks and there's all these people that dedicate their lives to just winning a daily fantasy. Well, no. This is just you. You pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 players to create an entry. And those 2 to 6 players, you pick more than or less than on their stat projections. And then you watch the winnings roll in. It is so easy. And Prize Picks offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts. There's like Taco Tuesday, where every Tuesday Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25%. That gives you even more value. And my very favorite part of all of this, Prize Picks offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account this football season. So go to prizepicks.com/candlestick and use code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. Go to prizepicks.com/candlestick and use code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. You can jump in and get Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, George Kittle. Slam the more than and root like heck for those guys to go more than those projections. It's, I'm telling you, It's the very best way to consume football. So prizepicks.com/candlestick and use code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy. Yo, it's your homies Kyle and Chris for Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website. They are the official clothing brand of Candlestick Chronicles. And follow them on Instagram at SGLambChops because they have some really cool looking stuff that your bland ass boy over here is not very good at styling on his own. And so I pop over to the Instagram. I see how other people are dressing themselves in maybe it's the wolf shorts or the lion shorts, or maybe it's a pair of joggers, or maybe it's the ash gray hoodie that you and I love so much. And I base my outfits off of that, and it always makes me look dope, which is the single most important thing.
And it's also comfortable. It's also high quality. Yeah. It's super stylish. They're conversation starters, honestly. They also have kid sizes on here too.
Yes. That is,
and everything's correct. Unisex. Yeah. We should point out also. So, yeah. No matter if you're a man or woman, these clothes will look great on you.
Or a child. They have children's sizes and a lot of their stuff as well. Use promo code Candlestick20 today to get 20% off your order, or you can do it tomorrow or whenever. Candlestick20 is a promo code any day of the week to get 20% off your order from SGLambChops.com. Shout out to them. We really appreciate their support, and we would appreciate it if you support them by going to SGLambChops.com and ordering some dope, comfortable, high-quality clothing. Join the herd today.
So
take all the names out of it. Take the names out of it. And the faces and the teams. And Team A was down 17 points in the third quarter and came back to win in regulation. And the quarterback had one turnover in the first half, but ran it for, what'd you say, 41 yards?
49
yards. But really, does that include his three-yard loss in the last kneel down?
I think it does.
So 50 plus yards, ran for 50 yards. We'll just say 50. We'll round it up, slash down. He runs for 50 yards in the second half, doesn't turn it over, and throws a touchdown and has a 51 yard completion in there. It's like nobody, like, that's an amazing game. It's not the best game I've ever been to. But it's the best game I've ever covered, like, in person by a wide margin.
Yeah.
And it's the first time during the Kyle Shanahan era that I've been sitting there at halftime or at some point in the third quarter going, there's no way they win this game. And then they end up winning it. Like, during the Packers game, it was like, man, they're not playing well if they keep doing this. But like I said, there were like pathways to where, okay, they're just better than the Packers. And you could see them taking over, but I didn't see that angle tonight, and then it was just there. It's just so nuts.
I think there's, aside from just like having a quarterback who turns the ball over every play, I don't think there's anything more demoralizing than just being completely unable to stop the run.
Can we talk about the Lions real quick in regards to this, the stopping the run aspect of this? Because the Niners had nothing for it. Nick Wagner from ESPN, friend of the pod, our favorite cast member.
The guy you talked to today at the game.
The guy I talked to today. Said that before Jahmyr Gibbs' 13-yard run on 3rd and 12, where he went untouched out of bounds, before that play, the Lions were averaging 6 yards per carry before contact. Before contact, they were gaining 6 yards before somebody hit them. And don't even get me started on all the missed tackles and stuff. It was just, I'm with you. It was like the Niners defense had nothing. Even when you'd have Fred Warner flying downhill and Dre Greenlaw and Oren Burks and whoever else is like, nah, it didn't matter. It was like they had 13 offensive linemen on the field.
Yeah, I think it was in the first half, it was the most yards they had allowed on the ground in a game at home in like 2 years.
Just in the first half. Yeah. God, that's nuts.
Yeah.
So why did the... I just... the Lions on like their second drive started going to weird like reverses, double passes, and then they tried a flea flicker in there at one point. And then when they were going for it on fourth and three, which we can talk about as well, they put it in Jared Goff's hands. And when at the end of the half, on the last play of the half, instead of taking the three or instead of taking trying for a touchdown, they take the three. They were a mess, dude. Like, yeah. I know Dan Campbell's a good coach and he turned that team around, and I all the credit. He was a disaster. That was a mess.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Or this is, I've been thinking, full disclosure, I'm in Memphis again for the second time in like a month. I was in Memphis for the week when the Niners clinched the one seed against Washington, but I'm back in Memphis for Kings Grizzlies. But I've had a lot of time to sort of reconcile the Dan Campbell fourth down stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cool with, like, I understand that if this is the way you've built your team and this is the way you've had success all season by going for it on fourth down, mm-hmm. then keep doing it. Like go with the girl that, you know, dance with the girl you brought, you know, like just, but unequivocally, those fourth downs and not getting them specifically were like huge moments in the game.
Yep.
So it was very much a live by the sword, die by the sword type of thing. And I don't hate the fact that Dan Campbell went for those fourth downs. If I ran a team, I would be much more conservative on fourth down and just like, especially just like taking points off the board, right? Like if you have a 17 point lead in a game, I'm just like, yeah, if I can keep adding points, just adding points and see where I fall at the end of the day, mm-hmm. like try not to give the other team momentum. And I know, you know, George Kittle joked about it, or not even joked about it. He mentioned it at the podium after the game. Like, he has no idea why analytics people say momentum doesn't exist. And I completely agree. Like, anybody that's shot a basketball or hit a golf ball,
mm-hmm.
or like done anything, know that you can get in a groove. And like, yeah. you talk to football players. I've been in that locker room tons of times and talked to players about momentum and covered countless football games in high school, college, pros. Like, momentum is super real. It just is.
Dude, like, if you want to make fight or flight,
if you want to make a statistical argument that it doesn't exist, fine. Like, go do your proof. Like, I'm cool with that. If that's how you want to think, I'm not going to tell you that you're necessarily wrong. I will just point out that momentum actually does exist. And mm-hmm. so I don't blame Dan Campbell for going for it. I think the play calls are probably bad, to your point. The way they were running the ball down the Niners' throat throughout the majority of the game, I thought maybe on fourth and two, you'd try a creative running play, or maybe you run at Chase Young, who had been struggling to stop the run, you know, the last few weeks, let alone today. You know, and if you get a fourth and two or a fourth and three in those scenarios with the run, then you are completely demoralizing the Niners.
Right. There was, I couldn't agree more with everything you just said. I can't line up the Lions not going for the touchdown at the end of the half.
Yeah. That's one that's not getting talked about enough, I don't think.
28-7. Look, that game's over, bro. That game's 28-7 is so dramatically different than 24-7. And if they had lined up on fourth and goal from the three or whatever it was, and handed it off to David Montgomery and he plows in for a touchdown, like, you talk about momentum, the Niners aren't going into the locker room going, "Hey, we're not going out sad." It's like, well, shit, like, it's 28-7 now.
And that's what Kyle Shanahan said after the game. He was like, it was 17 points. Like, we felt fortunate to be down 17 points. We felt like it could have been a lot worse. Mm-hmm. And they felt like 17 points was surmountable. Like, they thought they could come back from 17 points. If it's 21 points, then it, like, to your point, it's completely different. And it sort of flies against the, like, oh, let's give Dan Campbell credit for being aggressive on those fourth downs later in the game, mm-hmm. but like, what about the one at the end of the second half?
It didn't end of the first half.
First half, second quarter.
it didn't because I was so certain. I was like, damn, they're gonna go for it. And we're sitting up in there in the press box, and it's like, yeah, they should probably go for this. That you could go play action, you could just run it. There's a million things they could do to drop an easy touchdown.
It felt like they were averaging 12 yards a carry.
It was nuts. And if they, so they don't, it's like, okay, you take the points. But then you have a chance after the Niners make it 24-10. You held them to a field goal. Now you go down, you kick a field goal. It's three scores again, and now it's even later in the game. It's like, man, that's a good spot to take the three. Like, I'm sorry. I don't give a shit about the 2%, 0.02% increase in win probability if they go for it. It's like, does that take into account it's Jared Goff outdoors in a huge playoff game throwing to Josh Reynolds? No,
I can't stand win probability, bro.
It's so stupid. It's the dumbest thing.
So anytime there's a big comeback, like it feels like every week, no matter whether it's college or NFL, you see this crazy comeback, right? Somewhere in the country, some level of football, there's a crazy comeback. And then people will point to a win probability graph. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, if the win probability was 99%, then why do we keep seeing all these comebacks every single week?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, why does it, like, anecdotally, like, and maybe these are just one out of 100 games that happen. There's so many games, and statistically, mm-hmm. the 99% is right. I'm just not convinced that win probability is ever actually accurate in terms of, like,
it feels very made up.
Right. Like, oh, this team has a big lead and they've accumulated all these stats like leading into this moment. It's like, yeah. And things have a way to balance out. Like football is a game that is designed to like sort of balance things out.
There are too many variables in a game to game situation to have a universal win probability stat. And I'm missing the boat on what it is, but man, I just don't. Just to get back to the Dan Campbell aspect of this, I'm sure going for it on the first one when it was 24-10, I'm sure going for it, yeah, if you get it, now you have a better chance to score a touchdown, and now you're going up 31-10. Okay, that's great, but that's a lot of things that need to go right. And again, why are you putting it in Jared Goff's hands? Why are you doing that? That's not a good player. But he wasn't very good tonight. He made a couple of nice throws on their last touchdown drive, but it wasn't like, oh my God, Jared Goff is just cooking.
He was cooking in the first half for sure.
He was fine.
He didn't get help by his receivers.
No, but it's like, why are you, that didn't make any sense. And then the second one is just, that was a total mess. The one where they could have tied the game. I don't know, man.
You can make the case, right? Between the end of the first half when you kick a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown, and then the other two fourth down decisions you make when you decide against kicking field goals and field goal range. And again, hindsight is 20/20. I fully understand that, but it just needs to be noted in the context of this game. Those fourth down decisions cost the Lions in aggregate roughly 10 points. No. 4 points for kicking the field goal instead of trying to score a touchdown there, and then 6 points for not kicking the two field goals. It's mm-hmm. 10 points in a game that you lose by three.
Yeah.
So again, like if we want to quibble,
that's
fine.
That's a win probability of zero.
I'm fine with, you know, like we go for it on fourth down. We've been doing it all year. That's the makeup of our team. I'm fine with that. Stick with it. Like don't change who you are now. But in order to properly analyze what happened in this game, not getting it on fourth down or in those three fourth downs were huge determining factors in what happened.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yep. Yeah. I didn't get it, but it's what got them there. And it's going to be a big reason. It's not the reason, but it's a big reason why they're going to be sitting at home for the Super Bowl.
And maybe we should rethink, you know, Kyle Shanahan's lack of aggressive nature when we discuss these things.
Sometimes. with Shanahan, it's way more the like clock usage for
Shanahan's for like, we have 7.5 minutes left and three timeouts on our own 30-yard line. we're gonna settle for the field goal here.
It's dude.
We're gonna run a 17 play drive before the half ends and make sure we kick a field goal and we're the last team in possession of the ball.
I was having a great time, and shout out to my guy Evan Giddings who does a bunch of stuff with 95.7 The Game. I was sitting next to him and we were having a great time at the end of the half. The Niners got the ball back in the second quarter with like 10:17 left. And we were like, hey, lap opportunity here. Grind those 10 minutes down.
Yeah.
Take the field goal. Yeah. Now it's, yeah, the Shanahan game management stuff to me is more clock related than the fourth down stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, defensively in the second half, as bad as they were in the first half, they not necessarily turned the faucet off, because like you said, they did catch a couple of breaks with a couple of drop passes, but it didn't feel like the Lions in the second half could just go get 6 yards on the ground whenever they wanted it.
Yeah.
And Nick Bosa had an awesome game in the couple of really, really big spots, most notably that second fourth down try, where the Niners were up three. They got a ton of pressure on that play and forced Goff off his spot. So they were way better in the second half.
The Lions averaged 3.3 yards per carry in the third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, they only had two rushing attempts. They went for 14 yards.
Wow.
With a long of 16. So they had a 16-yard run and a -2-yard run, which would have been, oh, that's the other one. Running the ball at the goal line with the minute left and getting stuffed was a huge, huge mistake for the Lions. I don't know if that was a Dan Campbell or a Ben Johnson call.
Oh, yeah.
But they had... Yeah, they had to use a timeout, and then it basically meant that they had to get the onside kick to win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so,
yeah, that was a really strange set of play calls.
Yeah.
But
yeah, man. I think that this is like a signature playoff win for Kyle Shanahan.
1,000%. It's not even close. It is the signature playoff win for Kyle Shanahan.
And it also, given, and I know Nick's made this point, he even made this point on this podcast while you were in Hawaii, which we haven't talked about at all, but people say they want Brock Purdy to like, you know, have more comeback wins and stuff. Well, mm-hmm. Given how good the 49ers have been, it would be pretty disastrous if they ever did have to like come back, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of asking for them to like do what they did tonight and get destroyed for a half and then come back to legitimize like the whole Brock Purdy comeback argument.
Right.
Right. So it's just kind of fun. Like, would you rather have, I mean, obviously you feel good about Brock Purdy being tested, but it's just silly because like in order to come back to win a game when you're down big and have that test, you have to get your ass kicked for a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
And no 49er fan would say, oh yeah, that first half was great. Really enjoyed that. Had a ton of confidence going into the third quarter. You know,
felt good.
So yeah, but like Brock Purdy answered that question for sure.
Dude, it was the first thing I saw after the game, because I accidentally went to Twitter, which is a terrible idea, was somebody saying that they were unimpressed with Purdy because his longest completion was a ball that should have been an interception. And like I said, I would push back on the should have been intercepted aspect of that. But like, what's the goal here? What's the guy have to do? I know we talked about this earlier, but what is, like you said, it's so hard to be down 17 and then just come back to win.
If you would rather have Dak Prescott and be paying him $40 million a year to lose playoff games, then like, go ahead, make that argument.
Totally. Totally.
Congratulations. Like, Dak Prescott's a more talented quarterback than Brock Purdy. Awesome.
Yeah.
You've made your point. That's totally, totally great. Dak Prescott's better than Brock Purdy, but Brock's the one that's gone deeper into the playoffs and is still on a rookie contract, making 1/40th of what Dak Prescott's making.
Mina Kimes said it, man, on what's Bomani Jones' show called? The Right Time.
Yeah.
With Bomani Jones. She said it, man. Like, the Niners needed to improve at quarterback, and they very clearly have. And the game isn't played in a vacuum. So whether Brock Purdy is better than Lamar Jackson or better than Josh Allen or better than Patrick Mahomes or whatever quarterback, doesn't matter. Because he is good enough that the 49ers can come back from 17 down. Yeah. And that's not something that you could have said with any other quarterback they've had in the Kyle Shanahan era. And like, that's just it. So,
yeah, he was the dude tonight. Like, being able to scramble and make those plays, that's a
huge,
that's
dude.
That's just an element of the offense they haven't had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the big commentary on Jimmy Garoppolo was like, what can he do outside of structure? What can he do when Kyle Shanahan's play calling isn't there for him on any given snap? It's like, well, he can't really do much. He just kind of sits in the pocket, and then when before the pressure comes, he makes these wild throws that often get intercepted.
Yeah.
Right? There was no, you know, but post ACL injury for Jimmy Garoppolo, there was no second reaction. It was just like holding on to the ball too long and never escaping, never throwing the ball away. And now you have a quarterback who benefits from Kyle Shanahan's play calling and benefits from the guys he has around him. Mm-hmm. But also, when the play breaks down and all of those things are not at his disposal, he can go beat Alex Anzalone for a 20-yard gain in the fourth quarter of a playoff game and set up the game-deciding touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like the guy deserves to be considered like just a winner. He's a winning player.
Yes. Yes. He's a very good player. Christian McCaffrey has a stinger, I guess, in his shoulder and didn't finish the game. But Shanahan said he would have gone back into the game. But McCaffrey said he didn't go back into the game because he was worried that his shoulder wasn't going to be strong enough to hold on to the ball.
Yeah, he had a stinger, and it sounded like he worried that he wouldn't be able to grip the ball.
Yeah.
Like, it's a nerve thing. So if you're like, if you can't feel your fingers, you'd probably... Right. Probably don't want to be handing that guy the ball when all you need to do is just not fumble. So we'll see about that.
Can we do two things before we wrap up here?
Sure.
Okay. One, I was so certain the Lions were going to recover that onside kick. Like, why? Just with the way that game had gone, I had pre-written the 49ers win. I had all the SEO stuff done, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, this is one of those weird-ass Dan Campbell things where they're going to recover this, they're going to go score a touchdown, and they're going to be like, yeah, we repped that onside kick 6,000 times in practice, and we're going to have to hear from Cameron Dicker or whatever the hell their kicker's name is. Michael Badgley, sorry, other former Charger. Michael Badgley being like, oh, yeah, Dan just believed in me, and he put his mana through me so I could make that kick. And wow, our spiritual leader. And I was like, it was just so certain it was going to happen, and then it didn't. And I was very shocked. Also, the ladybug thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Brandon Ayuk apparently said that there was like some ladybug that landed on him, and it gave him the luck he needed to make the catch. This is no bullshit. Before the game, a ladybug landed on the press box window right in front of me, and I was trying to take a photo of it so I could be like, are ladybugs good luck on Twitter? Because like, clout, am I right? But I couldn't get a clear photo. but I couldn't get a clear photo of what it was on the window.
Mm.
And it just looked like a smudge, and so I didn't take the photo. And damn, all I can think about right now is how much that would have blown up if that tweet had gone out and then Brandon Ayuk said that.
You think it was the same ladybug?
It was very... Oh. I'm going to go hard maybe.
I can't rule it out.
It's a non-zero chance it was the same ladybug.
We cannot rule it out.
No.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey was really good. It was
good player.
I don't ever think he should be taken for granted, because I think a lot of running backs would have run for like 30 yards in those looks and the way the Lions seem to be dominating the line of scrimmage, and mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey still finished with 90 and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
He's so good, man.
He's like so many yards.
I covered some Stanford games and watched him, and it just felt like Stanford just kind of mauled everybody, and he was running through like wide open lanes, and like I knew he was a really good athlete and stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a good feel for just how instinctual of a football player he was, man, until he came to the 49ers.
Yeah.
And just his ability to turn a run that looks like it should go for no gain into like 6 yards might be like the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he's super physical and super difficult to tackle. And I did not think that that's the type of guy he would be after watching him play a number of times in person while he was at Stanford.
Yeah.
And so shout out to him, man. Like he's looking like a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah. A light 132 yards, scrimmage yards, that is, in the NFC Championship game. 2 touchdowns.
In a 3-point win.
Would have been 3 touchdowns if he hadn't landed on his dome on that 25-yard run that had no business being a 25-yard run.
Right.
So yeah, he was really good. And my new favorite thing that the 49ers do, and in fact, not to step on our 2-week Super Bowl preview that's coming up, lock in. I think the 49ers need to get Deebo Samuel involved more earlier, because it feels like they really let their offense stall out before they're like, all right, fine, break in case of emergency. Just give it to Deebo and let him do stuff. And then that'll open everything else up. I think they need to do that earlier. He had 9 targets in the game. 6 of them were in the second half. And it was like they came out in the second half. We're like, all right, let's get this thing going. Let's just start throwing it to 19.
Yeah, I want to go back in and rewatch the game and pay closer attention to like formations and stuff. It does feel like the 49ers have kind of gotten away from... I'd love to see the shotgun numbers and stuff. It feels like a lot of time it's like... You know, I've talked about this before, but like when you line up under center and you can do play action and all those things, it just seems like the offense flows and mm-hmm. is in much better rhythm than mm-hmm. when it's just like Brock and shotgun every snap. But anyway, we'll have plenty of time to talk about all that. Watching the Chiefs and Ravens kind of go more or less how I thought it would go, in that like I think the Chiefs defense is really, really good. And I kind of think just the way this sounds like blasphemous when you just talk about like these defenses on paper, but I think it's a little bit crazy that the Niners are favored against the Chiefs, at least in these opening lines. And I've seen like 2.5 and 1 and 1.5, whatever that neighborhood is. Mm-hmm. Cause, and like, I don't want Niners fans to be mad at me, but I feel like the Chiefs have a better defense right now and a better quarterback. And it's kind of crazy. And it's kind of crazy to me that the Chiefs that the Niners are favored. But we'll have plenty of time to talk about that.
I've seen conflicting numbers on that now.
Yeah.
I bet it lands at
on
either
the line.
Yeah. I bet it lands at probably like a pick.
Vegas doesn't do pick-ems. I haven't seen hardly any pick-ems this year.
Did you see Chauncey Gardner-Johnson waving goodbye to people in the second quarter?
I did. It's weird how that works out.
What a dipshit. What are you doing? No, so, like, what? I get he's talked all that trash with Deebo, and okay, they're up, what was it, 21-7 at that point. But it's 21-7 with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. That game could be tied by halftime. At least when Deebo waved goodbye to the Eagles fans, it was his long touchdown that made it like 42-19 or whatever it was.
Like, it was, and he just had kinda, like... A completely ridiculous game,
right? It had a monster game. I get, like, that's a great that's a great taunt. Waving goodbye to the fans is a great taunt. A+. 9 minutes into the second quarter, not a great time to do it, man. And now he has to eat shit.
Deebo Samuel has. I haven't gone through Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's resume, but I think we can make a couple of comparisons real quick. Okay. Deebo Samuel has been an All-Pro. He's gotten a very lucrative contract. He's had a lot of really great performances in playoff games and in like very important regular season games. And Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is on his third team and might be on his fourth next year.
Yes. I'm running through this real quick. No Pro Bowls, no All Pros. He led the league in interceptions last year with 6. That's good.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. He's a
I think player. The point here, objectively, if you were to ask 32 NFL GMs which player they would rather have on their roster, all things considered, I think 32 point. Out of 32 would prefer Deebo Samuel over Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, I think so too. But hey, Chauncey got to wave goodbye to some fans in the second quarter. So love yeah, that. Good, love good that for him. Him. Love that for our guy.
We would be remiss if we didn't. I just hinted at it a little bit. We have to do just very quick initial thoughts on Niners Chiefs.
Chiefs by 10. No. I think it's yeah, I haven't like paid super close attention to the Chiefs this year, but I was saying all year, like, I will not be the guy to rule out the Chiefs. Just okay. No matter what. It's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are going to figure it out, and sure enough, they're figuring it out. So I think that is a very formidable opponent, and I think the 49ers have to figure out how to stop the run or they're going to lose.
Yeah, Pacheco's good, and their defense is really good, and Steve Spagnuolo now is carving himself out as one of the best playoff defensive coordinators ever.
Like, just obliterated the Ravens today.
Yeah, which is wild because it, you know,
it was a Ravens thought, team that was rolling.
The thought going in was that the Ravens were have just reached like unstoppable levels and could, you know, like Lamar's a much better passer and he's better at determining, you know, when to continue making his reads and when to scramble. And the Chiefs have turned over their secondary and have a bunch of young players on the back end now. And it's like the defense has improved pretty substantially, I would say, since the Niners played them in the 2019 Super Bowl. We're going to dive in. We're going to have 2 weeks to talk about it. I love that this is the matchup, honestly.
Me too.
NFL fans in general might have a little bit of Chiefs and Niners fatigue collectively.
Sure.
But I think this isn't like from a pure, like, obviously we follow the Niners from our standpoint. I think this is about as good as it gets. I mean, there, yep. You can make a good case that like the Niners Ravens would have been another amazing Super Bowl. And they obviously have history given the 2012 Super Bowl, but this one, you know, Mahomes, Shanahan, the Shanahan Niners, like, this is just, I think this is as good as it gets from our standpoint.
Yeah.
And fans should be excited. There are going to be so many Niners fans in Vegas.
It's going to be nuts. It's going to be super nuts. The Ravens today, just talking about the Chiefs defense real quick, the Ravens today went punt, touchdown, fumble, punt, 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 fumble, interception, field goal.
And they had 2 turnovers. One, the last one was an interception thrown into the end zone.
Yeah.
The other one was Brandon Flowers getting stripped. It's like 6 inches before the goal line.
Zay Flowers,
sorry. Ladarius Sneed.
Legarius,
sorry. I'm just killing it with the names. It's definitely 1:30. Yeah. It's 1:30 in Memphis, and I traveled today, but, you know, no big deal. Just toughing it out over here. Anyway, the Sneed play came... I guess Flowers had like taunted Sneed earlier in the game and was flagged for it. And then Sneed at the goal line knocked the ball out of his hands. So the Ravens had 2 turnovers in or near the end zone in a game that they lost by 7.
Was it you guys in the group chat that brought up during the game? Somebody brought this up. It might have been you and Nick. Deebo not reaching for the goal line.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
Before
that was a great play, great non-play by Deebo.
Before, Deebo had a running play right before McCaffrey's touchdown going into the north end zone. I think it was his first one. No, it was his second touchdown. Mm-hmm. It was the second touchdown of the third quarter because the IU touchdown was the first one, right?
Yeah.
Or am I mixing that up? Anyway, Debo got the run. He was going towards the left pylon. I thought he was going to extend and reach the ball out with the potential of fumbling. Like we've seen, I don't know, it feels like it's happened every week recently in these playoffs, at least, where someone fumbles it and it goes either out of bounds or out through the end zone and it's a turnover to the other team. Debo just kept it tucked and went down.
Yep.
And it was, I thought it was super underrated.
That was the second. That was the game-tying touchdown, by the way.
The game-tying touchdown. Okay. Yeah, because yeah, Ayuk scored the first one in the third quarter. That makes sense.
Yep.
History, man. Right. That was historic stuff. That was fun.
Absolutely wild. Shout out to my folks. It's their 35th wedding anniversary today. And they spent it hanging out watching a historic NFL game. But good for them. Love them very
much. I knew
thanks, Mom.
So many non-media members who were at that game. I was extremely, extremely envious not to see so many of my friends. But I'm glad everyone got a great show because that was including your parents, by the way.
Shout out to Craig, by the way, our guy. He and four of his friends were there. Three or four of his friends. And every one of the friends is a fan of a different team, but they all pulled up in Niner gear today.
Nice.
Supporting the homie. And I was like, would this be the same if it was like, you know, Team X? And they're like, yep, that's how it is.
That's cool.
That's dope. So, great atmosphere. Lions fans were great. They showed out. And the atmosphere during the tailgates was great. The atmosphere in the game was incredible. It's the loudest I've ever heard Levi Stadium. When McCaffrey scored that touchdown to tie it, it was just bedlam.
Yeah.
It was totally nuts. So the faithful traveled.
The faithful traveled to their home
field.
They
were in the building.
I feel for Lions fans, man. That one's tough.
I would be. I went down and I walked through the Hilton like tailgate party thing they do after games there by Levi's. And there were a bunch of Lions fans there, like, hanging out. I was like, dude, I would be despondent right now if I was a Lions fan. Like, up 24-7, just dominating. You're like, hey, go to the Super Bowl for the first time. Holy shit, here we go. And then it's over and you lost.
So I was in Detroit a few weeks ago for Kings Pistons. Not to brag, but I got to watch the Pistons play basketball.
What are your thoughts on Asar Thompson?
Raw. but I got the feeling in talking to like the handful of locals in Detroit that it was like, yeah, man, like this is awesome. It's not going to be that devastating if we don't win our Super Bowl or get there. Like this is, this team is so far exceeded expectations and we're just so happy to get home playoff games.
Yeah.
That like this is this is amazing. So and like Getting to beat getting to beat Matt Stafford and the Rams after that trade had to make the season. And anything beyond that for them was just kind of gravy. So anyway.
All right. That's it for us. We'll be potting throughout the couple of weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. Should be a ton of fun. Can't wait to break this down for a couple of weeks.
Keep it locked to the Sacramento Bee for Kings Grizz coverage. Live from the Grindhouse tomorrow night.
Subscribe, rate, review at sacbee.com. Subscribe, rate, review to Candlestick Chronicles wherever you get your podcast. And shout out to the guy, the Niners employee who got in the elevator today and saw that my media badge had a blue like label on it and he was like, oh, from Detroit. I was like, what? No, like not at all. I was like, I do a Niners podcast. And he goes, oh. And I was like, yeah, Candlestick Chronicles, check it out. And he was like, oh, okay, yeah, I will. So if you happen to be listening to this, my guy, appreciate it. Nice. Subscribe, rate, review while you're here. And I also rode an elevator with Taylor Lautner today.
Taylor Lautner. He's very short.
He's an actor. Christian Yuschek made him a jacket last week.
Oh, that guy.
The Twilight guy.
Didn't he used to date Taylor Swift?
Did he?
I think he did.
Maybe. I don't know. Who hasn't she dated? Am I right?
Whoa.
No.
Whoa.
sorry, it was loud. Yeah, no, he gets in the elevator and I was like, well, some guy got on who I was like, I recognize this person. This is a person I should know who it is. It's an actor whose name I can't place. And then he gets on and my first thought was, well, that's Taylor Lautner. And then my second thought was, wow, he's super short. I am not a tall person and I am taller than he is.
That's funny because Taylor Swift's like 6 feet tall.
Yeah. 5'10", but that's fine.
Is she?
I have no idea. I'd assume anybody who says they're 6 foot is actually 5'10".
Should we do a like a Behind Enemy Lines podcast with like some of the Swifties we know?
Yes. Yes. I, like literally you read my mind. That was a thing I was going to suggest we do.
Hit us in the comments if you want us to talk to Taylor Swift fans to break down this Niners Chiefs matchup.
Just hitting it from all angles. We got 2 weeks. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.